CBS News reports that Hegseth was one of 12 National Guard members who were removed as guards for President Biden's 2021 inauguration over possible extremist ties. Hegseth has tattoos associated with the white supremacist and neo-Nazi movements, including what's known as a Jerusalem cross, a symbol used by Christian nationalists. Meanwhile, officials in Monterey, California, have confirmed police investigated Hegseth as part of an alleged sexual assault that occurred in 2017. At a hotel where Hegseth addressed the California Federation of Republican Women.
Pete Hegseth has also been a vocal opponent of the Pentagon's embrace of multiculturalism and the Pentagon's decision to allow women to serve in combat. Hegseth, who once served at Guantanamo, made headlines in 2019 for pushing Trump to pardon U.S. soldiers accused of war crimes, including one convicted of murder. We're joined now by Jeff Charlotte, journalist and author, professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College. His book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Professor Charlotte's new piece for Religion Dispatches is headlined, Meet Pete Hegseth, the man who will lead the entire U.S. military, a man deemed an extremist by the U.S. military. Well, let's start right there, Jeff Charlotte. Explain what you mean. Who called him an extremist, and what are Pete Hegseth's views?
The number one person who called Pete Hegseth an extremist is Pete Hegseth. It's page one of his new book, The War on Warriors. It's the way he leads out his interviews. This idea that he was too extreme for today's woke military, dominated, as he puts it, his words, by trans, lesbian, black females. And so he tells a story of being pushed out of the military. We can't actually confirm that. No one can confirm that. I think what's more important about it is that he wants that story out there. He wants it known that he is too far to the right for the armed forces.
So, Jeff Charlotte, could you explain, what do you think led Trump to name him?
So Pete Hegseth, he's from Central Casting. He's got the chiseled jaw. He's got the biceps that he flexes on his Instagram, showing off his tattoos that are from the white supremacist world. But he really came to Trump's attention through his advocacy for three military personnel charged or convicted of war crimes, and most famously Eddie Gallagher, the Navy SEAL, who was his own men said that he stabbed to death a teenage prisoner who was receiving medical care, shot deliberately a young girl. Hegseth used his platform to say, to sort of amplify Trump's idea. We've heard that Trump says the one rough hour, that violence is needed. And Trump liked it. But more than that, Hegseth promises in his book, the first war he's going to wage is against the U.S. military. That's whom he describes as the domestic enemy, the enemy within, to purge the generals who are disloyal to Trump and replace them who will do absolutely the commander's will. And I'm not paraphrasing. That's what's startling to me about this pick and the reaction to it is we speak of it as concerns. Here's a man who wrote a book declaring his intention to wage not metaphorical, but actual war within the United States. That's what he says. He says, this is not a political project anymore. This is a civil war.
Is anything known at all, Jeff, about his foreign policy positions? What does he think about the position of the U.S. military around the world?
That's actually that's another part of what makes him appealing to Trump is, on the one hand, he writes in traditional fascist style that war is absolutely necessary for what he calls normal men to realize their masculinity. On the other hand, like Trump, he presents this kind of isolationist posture. It's not that he doesn't want Israel to wage total war. He doesn't care as much about it. So then he says, okay, so where is this war? The war is within, and we will depend on the so-called normal men in Israel. He is, however, and this is important, he's a Christian nationalist. He believes absolutely in the idea of the ingathering of Israel as a stage toward the Book of Revelation and the Bible. So he sees Israel's war on the Palestinians as biblical prophecy and one that must be supported for the sake of Christendom.
And we want to continue on that strain and also talk about Governor Huckabee, also a proud Christian nationalist who President Trump has nominated to be the ambassador to Israel. But I wanted to stick with something you said for one moment and that you wrote about Jeff Charlotte in your piece. You laughed about, you know, his biceps, but it's what's on his biceps, those tattoos. On his chest, he had inked a Jerusalem cross, a symbol of the Crusaders' holy war against Muslims and Jews. And on the flip side of his bicep, there's this featured on his Instagram, Deus Vult, God Wills It. It's more Crusader kitsch and popular with white supremacists. Talk more about this, and then we'll play what he has to say to, for example, to Netanyahu.
So Hegseth talks a lot about his tattoos. They're important to him. He began getting them around 2016. The very first one was a cross with a sword running down the middle, which he said was a tribute to one of his favorite biblical verses, Matthew 10:34. This is taken by those who want not a peaceful Christianity, but a war religion. It's where Christ says, I come to bring not peace, but the sword. He then starts adding this, as I say, Crusader kitsch, because it's important. The Jerusalem cross, it was always a political symbol. It's not a symbol of spiritual struggle, just like Deus Vult. But it really, this imagery comes into popular culture not through deep study of history, but through a 2005 Ridley Scott movie, The Kingdom of Heaven. Much like the right at one point was emulating Braveheart, now they're emulating this movie, this idea of the Crusader Knight who wages holy war against Muslims, against Jews. In Hegseth's book, he talks at great length about the story of Gideon from the Book of Judges. And what's interesting to him about Gideon is that Gideon's first step was to purge the enemies within. That was the first battle. And then he emphasizes another part. Gideon goes to war. And we sort of know this. These are sort of Bible stories. But the part that he really likes is that after they've won the battle, Gideon orders his men to hunt down every one of the other force. And Hegseth's words, eliminate them all. That's the idea of this sleeve of tattoos, which mixes American nationalism, an AR-15 folded into an American flag, 1775, the year the army was founded, but also part of the sort of the mythos of J6, a group that he has had very positive things to say about.
Well, we'd like to turn now to ask about President-elect Trump's selection of former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee as the next U.S. ambassador to Israel. Huckabee is a leading U.S. Christian Zionist who's openly advocated for Israel's annexation of the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. In 2008, Huckabee declared, quote, there's really no such thing as a Palestinian. This is Huckabee speaking in 2017 when he was visiting an illegal Israeli settlement.
Israel would only be acting on the property it already owns. I think Israel has title deed to Judea and Samaria. There are certain words I refuse to use. There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement. There are communities, there are neighborhoods, there are cities. There's no such thing as an occupation.
So, Jeff Charlotte, that's Huckabee speaking in 2017. So if you could comment on what he said and also why Trump has selected him.
I mean, Huckabee is a sort of a key element of the Trump coalition. He brings in evangelicals, in particular kind of the older, more traditional evangelicals. He's a Southern Baptist. And he's also been involved with Israel for a long time. As he says, since 1973, he leads pilgrimages of Christians. It's important to understand that in all his advocacy for Israel, this comes from no particular care for the Jewish people. But as he puts it, he says, it's because I've read the end of the book, and by which he means the Book of Revelation. And again, like Hegseth, he sees Israel as playing a role in a battle not so much between Israelis and Palestinians, but as between Christendom versus the real enemy. There's an episode of his show in which he talks about who's really behind Hamas. And I tuned in thinking, you know, he was probably going to talk the various ideas and so on. And instead, he sounded like the old Saturday Night Live character, Satan. Hamas is, he argues, demon filled. Again, not a metaphor for him. So this is the man who is sort of representing the United States and Israel now, who is as fully fundamentalist as the even the furthest right element of the Israeli government right now, and sees this as a holy war. And again, kind of like Hegseth, in which any step is justified. You are fighting for God, and that's the end of the story for him.
Jeff Charlotte, you have written this book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. You certainly have extensively followed white nationalists, white supremacists. Where do Christian nationalists and Christian Zionists fit into this picture? I mean, he calls himself a Christian Zionist. You heard Huckabee, and by the way, he was the governor of Arkansas. His daughter, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is now the governor of Arkansas, and she was the spokesperson for the first President Trump White House. But where does he fit? Where do Christian Zionists fit into this whole story? And how do Jewish Zionists relate to them? And how does Israel, people like Netanyahu, how do they rely on Christian Zionists?
Huckabee likes to brag about his special relationship with Netanyahu, and Israel has, or right-wing Israel governments have said, look, Christian Zionists are useful to us, so we're going to support them. In fact, the right-wing Israeli governments have said Christian Zionists are actually our better American allies than American Jews. But Christian Zionism has in some ways been folded into Christian nationalism. Every Christian Zionist is a Christian nationalist, but not every Christian nationalist is a Christian Zionist. Christian nationalism is the larger view. And it tells us something more about what Huckabee is doing when you go through his archive, that so often when he's talking about Israel, what he's really talking about is, from his point of view, a struggle for power on the battleground that really matters, which is the United States. And so, for instance, he talks more when he wants to talk about Hamas. He often talks about Harvard. He talks about elites, these sort of, again, this idea of the enemy within. What happens in Israel is theologically important to him, but it's more useful politically in the United States. And that's where it brings us back around to Christian nationalism, this idea of a kind of not so much a pious nation as a holy war nation, and the war is within.
Jeff Charlotte, I want to thank you so much for being with us, journalist and author, professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College, author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. We'll link to your piece. Meet Pete Hegseth, the man who will lead the entire U.S. military, a man deemed an extremist by the U.S. military. Coming up, we go to Ithaca to speak with Cornell professor Enzo Traverso, author of Gaza Faces History.
Oh, when those bombs fell on Palestine streets, they bid life farewell, 'cause they were deceived. The whole world is watching whilst they all disappear. They face injustice, but God is near. Palestine, ya Palestine, بلاد العز والكرم. فلسطين يا فلسطين جروحك بك الحجر صرخات طفل بريء يسمعها رب البشر من صواريخ السماء تنزل مثل المطر يا فلسطين
by Muad. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from PBS 12 in Denver. Nermeen Sheikh is in New York.
We end today's show with the acclaimed historian Enzo Treverso, author of the new book, Gaza Faces History. One reviewer has said the book offers, quote, a devastating indictment of the rhetorical subterfuge by which Israel and its supporters in the West have justified Gaza's slaughter.
From Ithaca, New York, where he teaches at Cornell University. His other books include The Origins of Nazi Violence and the New Faces of Fascism, Populism, and the Far Right. Professor Enzo Treverso, welcome to Democracy Now! Your field of study has been fascism, the Nazis. Talk about why you're now taking on Gaza.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm a historian of modern European history. I was deeply affected by what is happening in Gaza now, like everyone, but I'm not a scholar of the Middle East, and at the beginning I didn't think to write a book on this war and this genocide. But I quickly realized that history and even a lot of words, a semantic related to the history of wars, the history of violence and genocides, and the European history itself was hugely mobilized in order to interpret the Gaza war. And I was shocked by the way in which many words, many concepts had been abused and misunderstood and mislead. Concepts like pogroms, Holocaust, anti-Semitism, Zionism. And so facing such misunderstanding of reality, so I thought it was important to clarify the meaning of such concepts.
Professor Treverso, you begin the book by citing Sebald's extraordinary work on the natural history of destruction, in which he tries to understand in part why, after the devastating aerial bombardments of German cities at the end of the Second World War, there was scarcely a word spoken by German survivors of those aerial assaults. Could you speak about how you use this as a kind of premise and how that one should interpret what's happened after October 7th through that lens, the way in which victims and perpetrators have represented, how victims and perpetrators have been represented in the conflict?
Yeah, I open my book quoting this great German writer, Vige Sebald, who pointed out how, at the end of the Second World War, Germans were silent about their own sufferings, which were uncontestable. So the German civil society had been destroyed by the Allied bombings. But this silence was related to the awareness that when Germans suffered these war crimes, Nazi Germany was perpetrating the Holocaust and worse crimes in Europe, particularly on the Eastern Front. And well, at the end of the Second World War, the Nuremberg trial judged the Nazi crimes. And only many decades later, the German suffering during the Second World War were acknowledged without appearing as a kind of exculpation or of relativization of Nazi crime. Now we are facing a paradoxical situation in which the perpetrator is Hamas and the Palestinians, and the victims are the Israelis. And this is a reversal of reality. It's like a Nuremberg trial in which, instead of the Nazi crimes, were judged the allied atrocities perpetrated by the U.S. and the U.K. Aircrafts.
Professor Traverso, could you explain why you think that this memory of the Holocaust, the way in which the Holocaust has been deployed since October 7th, is actually a desecration of the Holocaust itself? If you could elaborate on that point and why you think it's been used for these ends by so many.
Yeah, the memory of the Holocaust was subterranean, an underground, an occulted memory for decades after the Second World War. But through a very difficult and painful process of working through the past, the memory of the Holocaust became a central element of a pillar of the not only Western but global memorial landscape. We cannot think of the 20th century without locating the Holocaust at the center of this picture. And the memory of the Holocaust had, so I write in my book that became a kind of civil religion of our liberal democracies, and used in order to celebrate human rights and some fundamental values of our democracies. The Holocaust memory was extremely important as a kind of paradigm in order to elaborate the memory of other forms of violence and genocide. But during the last decades, I would say two last decades, the memory of the Holocaust experienced a paradoxical metamorphosis and was weaponized by Israel and by most Western powers in order to become a policy of an unconditional support of Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories. And this has extremely dangerous consequences, because today we are facing a dramatic, a tragic situation in which the memory of the Holocaust is invoked and claimed in order to justify a war in Gaza, which is taking genocidal features. And this means that the memory of the Holocaust is completely perverted. And think of the possible consequences of that. Those who are protesting against this genocidal war are accused of anti-Semitism. If the memory of the Holocaust is mobilized to defend unconditionally a genocidal policy, maybe people could think that the memory of the Holocaust is intrinsically bad. If criticizing a genocide is anti-Semitism, many people would think that anti-Semitism is not so bad. And finally, many people would start thinking that the Holocaust itself is a myth invented by Israel in order to justify its politics of occupation of the Palestinian territories and of oppression. So I worry that in the long view, maybe not immediately, but people who are claiming an unconditional defense of Israeli occupation and war in the name of the struggle against anti-Semitism and in the name of the memory of the Holocaust are preparing a new wave of anti-Semitism.
Professor Enzo Traverso, before we end today's show, I wanted to ask you about the victory of Trump. You've said what astonished you was not his winning, but the extent of his winning. One of your previous books is titled The New Faces of Fascism, Populism and the Far Right. If you could elaborate on this.
Yeah, in this book, I proposed the category of post-fascism in order to depict these very large and heterogeneous constellation of radical right, extreme right, fascist, and radical nationalist movements and party, which are rising on a global scale. And Trump is not an exception. Trump is part of this global phenomenon. And I use this concept of post-fascism because, for evident reasons, we live in a different context with respect to the age of classical fascism, and because there are many uncontestable differences between Donald Trump or Milei in Argentina or Marine Le Pen in France or Giorgia Meloni in Italy and classical fascism from this point of view. So it's something different with respect to fascism. But at the same time, we cannot approach and interpret this new political phenomenon without comparing it with classical fascism. It's something transitional between fascism and something unknown, which is emerging. Well, there is a debate in the United States.
We just have 20 seconds. I hate to say to you, Professor, we just have 20 seconds.
Yeah. So I said I have no difficulties to depict Trump as a fascist. He proved that he is ready to transgress the basic features of democracy, contesting the outcome of the election. But this kind of fascism is not a meteor.
We have to leave it there, but we are looking forward to doing an extended interview when you come to New York City. Cornell Professor Enzo Traverso is author of the new book, Gaza Faces History. And that does it for today's show. We've been broadcasting here in Denver at the studios of PBS 12 at the Five Points Media Center, which is also home to Free Speech TV. Thanks to the folks here at PBS 12, Bobby Springer, Mary Latsis, and the whole crew. Next week, we'll be broadcasting from Baku, Azerbaijan, the UN Climate Summit. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
you donated to Fund Drive 2024, thank you. We appreciate your loyalty to supporting grassroots independent voices that perk up your ears to what is personal, unique, and different on the dial.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.